Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for another episode of the CX Experience with Cloud Links. My name is Frank Wassenberg.
I am Kevin Sheehan, Frank's partner, founder of Cloud Links, CCaaS Advisory.
We have a great guest today for the show. Very excited about having Cameron Weeks, the co-founder and CEO of Edify, on the call today. Super excited to have him on, mostly because we're going to have some great information today, but also because they are our newest partner in our roster of suppliers for the contact center as a service space. And I got to tell you, we are super excited, Cameron, to have you on because we've seen the platform so much, we've seen the team so much, and we're just super excited for where this partnership is going to take us.
Yeah, thank you guys. And we're really excited about the partnership as well. And we're really excited about what we're doing for the customer service space, most importantly. You know, this industry has been around for a very long time. It's something that is new to anybody. The idea of customer service or the idea of cloud communications even. But the big opportunity we've seen here is that the market's got a bit stale. You're really kind of controlled by a handful of vendors that are all well known to us. And they really haven't changed what the offering is in 10, 20 years. And it's time for someone to radically mix that up and to provide a really different solution to this problem. I like to sum it all up by saying, you know, we've been talking about improving customer service for 10, 15 years now, but generally speaking, like, what have we actually seen get better? And so at some point in time, we should all, you know, stop talking about marketing and really start talking about technology and how we're actually building things that solve problems versus just putting more hot air into the world. And so that's what we're trying to identify.
Thank you, Cameron. So we have really the only time, we only have one generic question in this series, and we open with it as opposed to ending with it, which is obviously we're all aware that the CCaaS space is now incredibly stacked. How does Edify look to differentiate themselves from all their brethren?
Yeah, I think we do that a couple of different ways, and I think we'll be able to dive into that a bit more as we go into this.
Sure.
You know, we definitely bring a, you know, it all kind of starts with our founding statement, if you will. And what it is that we're customers too. And, you know, it started off being something that we just casually talked about as we were building the company. And it really kind of just stuck. And it's been something that we kind of drive every conversation internally and externally to. The things that we're doing here are just because the sole fact of someone needs to step up and do them. This is something that affects all of us. We're all customers. We're all buying things either professionally or personally, and we're all forced into this world of going through the customer experience journey and being on the side of delivering it as well as the side of receiving it. And we finally hit this frustration point where it was just time that someone did this better, that it was time to fix the core problem. And so on the Edify side, you know, the biggest pieces on the technology side is that we own the entire solution. And as soon as you say that, we actually exclude a large number of the competitors in the marketplace. And so, you know, we're not built on top of someone else's platform, and we don't actually use it. So it's all our stuff from end to end, at global scale even. So we're not dependent on other people. We don't get to point fingers if something goes wrong. We're in control of the whole thing.
You know, I'm going to actually go off script already, Frank. I apologize. But just, you know, very quickly, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and how did, were you always in this space, in the CCaaS space or the customer service space? Kind of take a picture.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah, you know, at the age of 5, I decided that I was going to be in the contact center world. No, not at all. it's not exactly, you know, the path that I had planned for myself. I'm incredibly happy with where I am, of course, but it was a bit of a journey here. And so I've built a handful of technology companies at this point. I started my first one actually when I was back in high school, and a co-founder, Bracken Fields, he and I kind of teamed up in high school and built our first company. And then we ran a few more through college up until the point that we actually built our company we just sold a couple years ago now, which was in the global communication space. And so that company, we grew it to be pretty interesting. And was really kind of focused on figuring out how to do VoIP or cloud communications at global scale for in a really meaningful way. And from that, we were really able to understand the core issues that were happening inside the customer service space and how there was a giant opportunity to really bring these these rapidly different markets together, like contact center, UC, and APIs. We saw this kind of trend happening where all three of these services were being bundled together by some of the larger vendors, namely like Avantage, by the acquisition of New Voice Media and Nexomo, and they obviously had the UC platform already. And so we kind of saw that trend occurring across the market, and we saw the big opportunity that if you put these things together into one bucket, into one solution, they really can unlock a lot more value for the customer. And so the opportunity we saw here was to build the first platform that actually brought all of those things together from day one on a common piece of software. And so what didn't happen through acquisition, we didn't bring a bunch of new things in and try to piece them together. This would be native code that was built from day one to really unlock the true potential that all these different services have for companies without all of the... decades of time.
Interesting. And you know, I find it interesting, Cameron, as you go through it, you're talking about the blend of service, you're talking about the blend of technology. And from what we see on the platform, you guys have AI playing a really powerful role in that blend. How are you guys building that so that it's most impactful for people? Because it does seem to be one of your core differentiators in the market.
Definitely is. You know, we definitely have the luxury that from our competition that we're not 50 years old. And when you're not 50 years old, AI is a lot easier to come by.
We just spent a lot of time spending on Kevin's 50th birthday.
Oh, I don't mean individuals. We have plenty of people who are 50 years old as a person. I'm talking organizations that are 50 plus years old. Entirely different thing. So when we developed this, we really looked at how could you embed AI at all levels of the stack, and not just at ways of, you know, what we commonly talk about in the marketplace today of like chatbots, of ways to engage customers and be a bit more efficient. Of course, we can do those things and they're fun to talk about, but it's not really what piques my interest. I get really excited about the ways that we can find overall efficiencies inside the customer service team with artificial intelligence, machine learning. And a couple of the things that really get my excitement on that is IVR is a great place. No more press one, press two, but actually being able to actually understand conversation and route someone based on that. All the way to the other end of that extreme where we can apply coaching and training tools with machine learning. And we can now give 100% coverage from a QA standpoint on every single interaction. Whether it's a phone call, a chat, an email, we can score those things, identify the opportunity for improvement, and automatically route them to managers. And so the big takeaway here from machine learning isn't just that it's another way to engage with customers. Of course, that's true. The bigger opportunity, in my opinion, is this gives us a way to understand what's happening inside the customer service team at levels that were never before possible. We can never do 100% QA coverage with a human-based workforce reviewing interactions. You'd have to have four times the size of team that you had working with customers, and that'd be ridiculous. But with machine learning, these things become immediately possible with almost no friction or pain to deploy.
It's very interesting. I mean, how do you measure that? How are you guys looking at this and saying, okay, I've got client A, we've instituted the AI platform, we've instituted our policies and procedures to make them more impactful. How are you measuring that? What are you showing clients that says, this is where you were, this is where you are today, outside of them doing their own KPI kind of measurements?
Yeah, and on the KPI side, I like to be a traditionalist. I hate when we create some new random KPI that's has no backstory, has no historical data or meaning to an organization, and we try to prove value on that. From a sales standpoint, it's a hard thing to do, trying to convince someone of something new that's important from a KPI standpoint. What I'd rather do is tie back to the old existing KPIs that we've ran our companies on for decades, like how we retain agents, how we keep people on the team, how we decrease things like handle time and obviously the impacts it has across the board. And then finally, how we increase overall customer satisfaction. And with machine learning, you can directly tie to all three of those categories, as well as a handful of more traditional benchmarks of how we know that we're succeeding. And so we can do things like having a huge impact on retention. We actually can keep the employees happier. We can develop them further. We can keep them on the team, which that alone has a major impact on the performance and costs of operating a customer service team. And then all the way down to a positive thing. Those situations are great. I'm talking more of the situations where we don't want to be on the phone for 5 hours. We'd much rather be on the phone for 5 minutes. And so we can use machine learning to make sure those things happen.
You know, it's interesting as you go through that, because when Kevin and I first started out, clients were coming back to us. I mean, we've been in this business now for a while. You start talking about the length of experience. We've been in the contact center space for a while, working with people for a long time. And it shifted from how fast can I get somebody off the phone to how impactful can I make that time with them on the phone to sure. Now you're seeing it as how do I empower that agent to deliver more and more service and more capabilities and open up the breadth of services that we can give to a client. It's really gone away from that, I think. That how fast can I get them off the phone to how engaged can we be with that client when we want it and where we want it. And AI has a powerful role to play in that, as well as omnichannel. You know, candidly, I think you guys draw a fine line, I think, in what we've seen from true omnichannel and multichannel, where people are blending the terms almost. People are almost saying, here's omnichannel, we have it, let's go. And when you look at it, it's not really omnichannel. You guys seem to have a really fine distinction between omni and multi.
Yeah, we don't make a lot of friends with how we address this, but we call it telling the truth. And you know, as a core foundation, it's not just hot air. It's not just the co-founder CEO saying that as a company, we like to tell the truth. We have strived to be the most transparent organization in our industry, top to bottom. And at simply put, the omnichannel is a great example of this. If your omnichannel solution means that you can do a web chat and you can do a phone call, but you cannot do a web chat phone call together, then that's not an omnichannel solution. I like to give the joke of this that, you know, we're all friends now and say that we're going to go plan a trip somewhere. We're going to go on a golf trip, let's just say. And we're on a text string, three of us on a group text, and we're talking through the details of it. And I like Delta and you like American and Kevin, you like United for some reason. And we're all bickering on which airline we're going to use to go fly to on this trip together. At some point in time, it might become too frustrating to stay on that group chat. Like, we could just share more information if we were just to get on the phone with one another. And so I would just call you and we'd talk through the problem and we'd move on. And that's just exactly, there's nothing even to think about there. That's just how we would live our lives today. But if we were engaging with a company, with a brand, and we had started off by text messaging them or web chatting them, there's no way in our mind we would think that you could just start a conversation with them and continue that conversation from where you stopped on the web chat or on the text right. message. And I mean, how silly would it be?
The natural assumption is whoever I'm chatting with right now is not the person who's going to be calling me. I'd right. have to start all over again.
And you think it's, you get so excited on the fraction of a percent chance that if you call in, that person might even be aware that you were chatting. Like that's the threshold of success, is that the person might be aware that you previously had chatted. Like that right there, mind-blowing idea.
Thumbs up win, right?
Right. Like that is the threshold for success in this industry, which is just hilarious. I mean, come on, guys. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's tough because over the years, you've seen it where it's almost like the bar has been set at a certain level and people are just happy to do it. You know, they're just happy to get to a certain point. They're happy to get to a certain level. And I think that's one of the things that's really driving the CCaaS space. You know, you look at what as a service has done for this, where premises-based solutions kind of fell short and opened up the market for this was this path of innovation, this rate of innovation, this ability for you to roll out features and services to people that a premises-based solution would cost them tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars to do. And you guys are able to roll that out platform-wide to people almost instantly.
Yeah, I mean, what happened here is terrible, but it's pretty simple to lay out. You had a giant multi-billion dollar industry that was really controlled by 3 to 4 vendors. And we don't need to name them. I think we're all well aware of what we're discussing here.
Yeah.
And those people became complacent. They became private equity driven organizations that were just charging absurd amounts of money and paying themselves outrageous income, outrageous benefits and bonuses from it. And that works up until the market catches on to what's going on. And we hit that point and we crossed it. And so today, and then in the middle there, what we had was a handful of new age companies come to market because they saw the opportunity to build something new. But they really didn't have the understanding and respect for traditional customer service and or global communications. And so we had a handful of these new logos that popped up. And again, they didn't have the background they needed. And so they thought they could go to market very quickly. They could build their application on top of other people's applications and come to market really fast there. The problem with that, as we all know now, is that those products left a lot to be desired. The quality and reliability wasn't really there to be able to move a mission critical organization of significant size from, you know, a on-premise legacy vendor onto a cloud solution. And so the last couple of years, the market kind of put up their guards a little bit and said, maybe cloud's not ready. And those legacy vendors, they were happy to step in and say, yeah, of course cloud's not ready. We've not provided it to you yet. You must wait. You know, our story is a bit different. We've been around the global communication space for 15 plus years. We have a deep understanding of how it works. We own all of our own technology, so there's no finger pointing. And so when you kind of put those two things together, we really have the opportunity to show people a way, a path to come to the cloud, no matter where you are in the world, and have high levels of success and incredibly new features that are available to you and your customer base.
Yeah. And sure. when you look at this, I think, you know, that's one of the values that CloudLinks brings to the table is we do this for clients. You know, there's a whole lot of trepidation around, you know, I just don't know what I don't know. I don't know what's out there. I don't know if what I'm being told is the truth. I don't know if what that vendor is saying, not that sales guys are liars, but they don't always know the right answer. And good ones say, I'll get back to you, and bad ones say, yes, you know, we can do that. And so that's a big chunk of where our focus is and our mission statement is helping clients avoid the mistakes that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So we help you avoid those mistakes in this purchase, and we help you structure the conversation a little more in tune, said by the end of the conversation, by the end of the evolution with us, you've got a good deal for you with the right service provider. We try to make it apparent to them who they're going with, because like you're saying, there's so much for somebody to absorb. It's mind-numbing when you really think about it.
Yeah, and not to get too in the weeds of the technology side of this, we'll leave that for another conversation, but at the highest level, and going back to this transparency piece of Edify, the Edify platform itself lives in 12 regions around the world. And all of those regions are interconnected together and sharing information in real time. And so the outcome of that is there's no single point of failure anywhere in the global system. The whole thing is self-recoverable, all running in an active environment. And what that means for the customer then is that, again, there's no single point of failure. There's no place for something to go wrong that's gonna cause them an outage. We go all the way to the extreme with that and actually wrap the entire platform offering in 100% SLA. And then we go even farther than that and kind of put our money where our mouth is with a 10 times financial guarantee. So we guarantee the platform to be available 100% of the time, or we'll actually pay back 10 times the contract value the customer paid us.
That's interesting.
Interesting.
You know, the concern around uptime and availability, it's sort of a first base fear. Because the reality is that we really haven't seen any outages of any significance from any of the cloud providers that we work with that has been business impacting on even a small level. It's almost like a naivete concern. I think once you get past that initial, oh, does it work? Which is what I think like Amazon was wrestling with 10 years ago.
Sure.
Now it's more the nuts and bolts of how things work. Scalability is a little bit different. You know, maybe you can touch upon, is it your own infrastructure? Are you going through a third party? How much time do you need to scale up? If someone has to add, you know, 300 agents because there's some kind of global crisis, just as an example, you know, walk us through how you guys would manage that. And is there any liability there?
Yeah, you know, it's all to us. It's all one and the same from a reliability, a scalability standpoint. So whether you have 50 users and you're going to 500, or you have 500, you're going to 5,000, the platform is built in a way that it makes it very easy for it to self-regulate and self-scale the platform wide to hit those needs. And it doesn't matter if those teams are all sitting in New York, or if they're all sitting in Texas, if they're all scattered across the entire world with, you know, pods of 20 or 50 or 100 people, you know, in every different place. you know, it's much more of a modern architecture where there's, again, no single point of failure. There's no giant monolithic system that we're trying to manage and keep control of. It's split up into very, very small parts that are just, you know, scaling as needs happen, no matter where they are in the world. It's an entirely different approach to architecture that makes these things possible to move from, sure, you know, handful of users to significant.
So more. If I'm an Edify customer, my contact center agents are not on a standalone cluster someplace. It's a distributed network. In other words, if I decide to add 100 agents, you don't have to add another cluster quickly.
No, there's none of that by any means. Okay. So it's a completely shared resource environment. Our infrastructure is actually equally split between Amazon and Google Web Services. Mm-hmm. Our Amazon Web Services and Google Compute Cloud. Goodness, I pushed those all together. and so, you know, as a CEO, I actually am a tech person. I understand how this stuff works.
Sure.
And so, equally split between both of those platforms. And we actually are not dependent on either platform for the overall product deliverability. And so we could lose all of Amazon, we could lose all of Google, and no one would have any, no one would have any understanding or impact that those things occurred. One of the questions that's follow on to this, it's pretty typical at this point, is around data security at that point. Then some people have some concerns there. And so we're very proud of the fact that all data inside of Edify is encrypted in transit and at rest. So whether it's a phone call, a web chat, or a file that got uploaded and stored in our system for the next 3 years, all of that data is always encrypted, and that encryption is controlled per company. So even if someone were to find a way to have access to your data, which again is nearly impossible, they still couldn't read it without your encryption key. So you are secure, you are safe inside the Edify platform.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's a differentiator right there for what you're talking about. The in transit and at rest is a massive concern for a lot of people. That assuages a lot of concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the majority of SIP calls across the internet today are still unencrypted, which is terrible.
Based upon the amount of SIP providers out there, I would agree with that.
You know, the this transparency piece, not to get hung up here for a while, I think the last piece that I really think is important to drive home is two things. One, pricing is online on the website, so that there's no game on this of what this is going to cost or how it works. We're very, very upfront with that. And then finally, I think the most important piece is that on the website, with nothing more than a cell phone number and an email address, just to validate that you're a human, not a bot, you can actually get a fully functioning Edify account. And so one of the coolest things that you guys and your partners will realize in the very near future is that when we go into a sales deal, we actually bring that up front to the customer in the first sales meeting. We say, we'll give you a demo here, but at this point in time, you guys have bought enough software that you have to start believing that software is a lot of nonsense, and the demo we give you today might not be the demo that you actually can buy. And you think that there's some software as a screenshot going on. Well, that is not how we do business. We're morally against that idea. And so to keep us honest, we encourage every customer at the end of the demo to actually go online and get an account. Again, there's no credit card required. It's completely free to do so. And we're not trying to say that you can onboard a 500 person customer or call center onto our product with no help. We're not saying that at all. What we are saying is the people that are in the buying decision, the five or six people that might be making the call at the company, they can go start giving themselves the exact same demo we gave them. And with a really cool thing that happens here is that we go from having sales conversations to product training conversations. Sales meetings become engagement meetings where we're explaining how something works and how you could go deeper with it or how you could configure this use case. And at the end of a handful of meetings, the sales team is no longer pushing the product on the customer. We're just helping them onboard through a sales process. It pushes every other vendor out incredibly quickly. Sure. And the answer to the whole thing, the secret, is just be transparent and tell the truth. That's the upfront, that's the secret of the whole thing.
Sure. And we respect that immensely. We try our best to operate the same way. Just asking a question now, just directly on the other side of that sales process, which during these times is becoming one of the most asked questions from our client base, the onboarding of a customer, how do you guys guarantee that onboarding and that project management leads to a happy customer? You know, getting somebody spun up quickly, functional quickly, sometimes can be half the battle.
Yeah, and I think it's both I think there's two teams that on our side really are important here. The technical support team, as well as the customer success team, the team that would be directly onboarding you. And the reason I bring up both of those teams is because of our philosophy of how we staff both of those teams. It's pretty radically different than the traditional method of this. And so we apply actual engineers to both teams. This is not like a level one triage or just someone who can project manage and take some information and move it along to other people. We're actually putting people on these teams that are certified on the platform that can run the APIs and they can build the U interfaces that can speak at a very technical level on how SIP works. People who are incredibly educated on how all these pieces come together, I think is one of the most important pieces of making that successful. That they're not just trying to collect information and go around the circle or the swivel chair old mentality of how you kind of pull together the information needed to onboard a customer. Going beyond that, just to the very project management nature of it, there is a dedicated team for account onboarding. You get assigned an account manager as a part of a new account. And they walk through that process with you. And we can do it on whatever timetable you like. We can do these things, you know, pretty rapidly over a couple of days, a couple of weeks. Or you, if you need to, you can scale these out over a couple of months. One of the really cool things about the Edify platform and its architecture is that it doesn't require a forklift removal. Obviously, to unlock all of the benefit and value that you're buying onto, you definitely need to get moved over. But we could do things like moving your IVR system over to our workflows tool day one. And then we could stair step out the deployment so that we're minimizing the impact on the overall team and minimizing risk there as well. So there's a number of ways to approach this. There is no cookie cutter approach, in my opinion. Every situation is a bit different. And the most important part is that we have a team that's qualified to work through that plan with you and develop one that works for your organization, not something that, you know, we rubber stamp and say, this is how we do it.
Sure.
And it's interesting. It's actually, that's what you just said is one of the reasons why Kevin and I have chosen not to verticalize within any particular industry. It actually dovetails nicely because we've never verticalized. We've never really considered it because we found that we're able to take things from the financial industry and apply them to the manufacturing industry and the manufacturing to healthcare and the healthcare to the insurance. You know, there's a lot of different things that we've been able to do that we've seen processes work across functionality. And so I appreciate what you're saying there. Where do you see the next 2 years for you guys? Where do you see Edify being most impactful in the next 2 years in the market? Are you guys looking to, you know, continue to disrupt it? Or are you looking to solidify the platform? What do you guys see the biggest impact?
Yeah, you know, the first, part of this life of this company was definitely around product development and ensuring that we are building a platform that we could successfully bring to market and be confident in its ability to perform. And we've by all means done that at this point. And so the next couple of years are really about logo generation for us. I think you're going to find us being incredibly aggressive in the market from a sales and marketing standpoint. I would say our marketing is already pretty aggressive. And really pushing to be the Magic Quadrant leader in the next 2 years. I would say by 3 years, extreme, leading the entire market.
That's a fantastic goal.
We built a platform that is capable of doing it. And now it's about building partnerships like this one to get more at-bats, to make sure that we're showing the world that there is a better alternative to customer service. There's a way to solve this problem. It doesn't have to be just hot air.
And I like it because that's probably the second statement you've said in this interview today that's not going to get you any friends in the market today. So I like it. I like the aggressive nature of it. There'll be a couple Christmas parties with the team there. I like it.
So
we have plenty of new roles we need to hire for. So we need all those people to leave those organizations and
sure.
Check out that's our career page.
That's great.
So if I was going to do just a quick 1-point summation as far as what separates you from the rest of the marketplace, just having listen to our chat, it would be the fact that Edify was built from the ground up looking to encompass all the different components of what is a modern cloud-based contact center. It wasn't a series of add-ons over time. Would I be right with that, or would you?
Yeah, definitely. It's over 15 years of learning about how this market wished it could work. And then being able to build exactly that with no debt around us, no old technical debt, no old legacy things that we had to carry along, able to build
right.
Something that was truly designed to meet the modern needs of companies and to bring the contact center, UC, and APIs all together under one roof, under one platform that truly does work together incredibly well.
Well, that's great. I mean, listen, Cameron, we've taken up a tremendous amount of your time today, and I really appreciate you spending this much time with us. Thank you very, very much. Is there anything you want to close with, or, you know, because candidly, I got a lot out of this, so I really appreciate it today.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it as well. And I think the biggest thing is just go let the product speak for itself. Activate.edify.cx, and you can get your own account.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much. This has absolutely been fantastic. I really do appreciate it. We'll sign off now and look forward to the next conversation with you.